It's time for Windows Weekly, the Build Edition, coming to us right now from somewhere in San Francisco. I'm thinking Moscone Center. I could be wrong.
Yep.
Mary Jo Foley and Paul Thurrott and a large crowd of beautiful people, all adorned in Windows blue. Hey, everybody! Wow. It's been some build, hasn't it?
They're only here because Mark Rozenovich isn't speaking right now, but thanks for coming.
Yeah, well, build's over, isn't it?
Not quite over. It ends at 3, so yeah, we're like the grand finale.
We're closing build, yeah. Kind of going out with a whimper.
Right.
Well, thanks to the folks at Microsoft. This is their broadcast facility. I guess the Channel 9 folks are using this and actually want to use it again in a couple hours, so we're going to...
Yeah.
We're going to move fast.
Right.
I doubt you did a rundown, a OneNote.
We did.
We did.
You did?
Yeah.
Wow.
We have to do one because we're going to have a lot of guests come up today.
Nice.
From the audience. So we wanted to clue you in where we're going with it. And then at the end, we're going to have a lot of audience questions. So... Think ahead what you want to ask.
And then we'll give away that BMW I see over there as a giveaway.
I thought we were giving this away.
Oh, yeah. We could give away a hat, too.
Yeah. Wait a minute. That looks like a tux.
Yeah, we all have... bring it up.
That couldn't possibly be.
We did get special hats to commemorate the show this year, Leo.
Bash on Windows 10, a penguin hat. Yep. Get it?
Wow. Well, let's... where do you want to start? There's so much to talk about.
I know.
Well, let's start with that Apple news from this week.
Did Apple have news this week?
No.
No.
No, they did not.
Thankfully, they managed to let the news cycle be all Microsoft. Actually, I almost want to... You sent me a fabulous picture of the four of you in your penguin hats.
Yes.
Right, right.
That's hysterical. I guess we should start with anniversary, because that's the name of Redstone 1, and is due out, I take it, on the anniversary the release of Windows 10.
I think you take it correctly. I think the point of the name is that it will come out roughly 1 year after the initial release of Windows 10. And I have to say, I initially wrote something that made fun of the name a little bit, but as I thought about it, obviously... they'll call this thing version 1607 or whatever that might be, and it's an update. It's fine, right? Mary Jo keeps calling it Anniversary Edition.
I do. I don't know why.
For some reason.
It's Anniversary Update.
Yeah.
Yeah. But to me, the most interesting part wasn't the name, but it was that Microsoft confirmed what our sources have been telling us all along, which is Redstone 1 is this summer.
Right, right.
So does that mean Redstone 2 is not this year? I believe we could infer that, but no one has said that.
And Terry Myerson literally said he would not speak to that topic. So
right.
We tried.
It'll still be Windows 10, right? I mean, they said this is the last version of Windows. No.
Right, right.
Right. Yep. So what's new in it, though? I mean, we got a glimpse of a few of the new features.
Here's the picture, by the way.
Right. Okay. The clown princes of the Windows community.
Right. That was us during the keynote on day one. We were in the front row.
By the way, the best part about that picture is that sitting in front of us, we were in the front row for the press, but there was one row in front of us, and that row was the Microsoft senior leadership team and board of directors, and they all turned around and took photos of us wearing these hats, and it was like this weird, it's like John Thompson.
It was, yeah.
It was so strange.
Wow.
Yeah.
So Microsoft, I don't see anyone else wearing these hats. Did Microsoft hand them out, or was it just, did you guys bring them?
No, I was going to bring Paul a t-shirt for Build that said, Thurrott loves Linux, I forgot.
Oh.
And then we were walking down the street in San Francisco, and we saw a woman selling these penguin hats.
Ah.
And then you bought several of them, I believe.
Yeah, I bought four of them. Because you can never have too many penguin hats.
No, you can't.
Now, in years past, Steve Ballmer would have come down there and beat the crap out of you.
Yep, yep. It's a new Microsoft, Leo.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, what's new? What do we know about? Because it's interesting. They announced a number of features during the keynote, but if you started going to the sessions, they actually revealed more features, coming in the anniversary edition.
Right.
So what were the four big ones? I know we had the Windows Inc., which is a little confusing because Inc. has been part of Windows since, I guess,
beginning.
Well, tablet PC edition. It's been there, you know, for a long time. But Inc. and Windows Inc., as they're calling it now, is sort of like the start experience in Windows in that it gives you a place to start with Inc. You know, that you have this pen, and how do you get started with it? You know, you can't just touch it to the screen and start doing stuff other than move a mouse cursor around. And so now they're treating the top of the pen like we treat the start button. You know, it's where you start. So you click that pen button, the Windows Inc. experience comes up. It gives you a pane with a list of the apps that are Inc. enabled. They're Inc. enabling more apps in the anniversary edition. Office will be Inc. enabled. Maps will be Inc. enabled. Sticky notes will be Inc. enabled. And so that's, I think that's one of the cooler, you know, big new features.
Yep.
What else we got?
They talked a little more about Edge.
Right.
They shared that they're working with a number of companies who we hoped they were working with on doing extensions.
Including, by the way, Leo, Pinterest, my favorite
Pinterest
social networking service.
Right.
Yep.
Adblock, Adblock Plus, LastPass.
They wanted to be very clear that they're not putting ad blocking into.
No, right, right. That was a little bit confusing. One of the sessions made that a little convoluted. Yeah.
They're merely supporting ad blockers. They're
that's right.
Ad blockers.
And specifically Adblock and Adblock Plus, right?
Right?
I think that, yeah.
Yes.
Is it the case that this is the ad blockers that work with Firefox? I mean, it was my understanding that basically these are Firefox plugins on Edge.
I thought it was Chrome, but I think what they're going to do is have a Chrome to Edge porting guide so that if you're an extension developer, you can take a Chrome extension, I think, or some form of browser extension, and bring it over to Edge.
Okay.
And they didn't really, it's funny, they didn't even mention extensions in the keynote for some reason. That was one of those features. I mean, we've known about that for the past week or so, but it will be included in Anniversary Edition.
Update your lower third. It says, it's all Whopper John. It says, you're Mary Jo Foley and you're doing New York City. And Mary Jo's Paparazzi, she's in Massachusetts. Oh, there we go.
Sorry.
Now you're only in the wrong locale.
Sorry about that.
In the hub.
And I'm in Dedham, Mass. I wish I was in Dedham, Mass.
Yeah.
But so what else? We got
Notification Center is getting some changes, right?
Yep. And actually, that's when they did, one of the things they didn't talk about in the keynote that I thought was so awesome was the notion that they were going to have Action Center in the cloud, meaning that if you dismissed a notification on one machine, it would be dismissed elsewhere. That's a huge problem, I think, with a lot of things, not just Windows. It's a problem with Facebook. It's a problem with Skype. You know, it's a problem all over. That's really cool.
Right.
But also Android integration there, so that you can integrate your Android phone, or a Windows phone too, I should say, Windows 10 Mobile. But it's interesting that they're supporting Android notifications on your PC. So as notifications come in on your phone, they'll come up on your PC. You can interact with them there. You can dismiss them there. And when you do, they get dismissed on the phone as well.
Yep. And then I think they also did share in one of the sessions something about handoff too, right?
Well, I think that's the same. Yeah.
Is that the same?
I think that's essentially the same.
I thought there was also phone calls being handed off.
Phone calls and in text messages, yep, through Cortana. Yep.
But they said there were 1,000 new APIs and features coming in the anniversary update. So obviously we don't know what every one of them is at this point.
We know about 4 of them.
Yeah.
So, or 4 or 8 of them. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot more to come.
Right.
So when are we going to see this stuff?
When are we going to see this stuff?
I bet at least some of it appears in the next Insider build.
Yeah,
right?
Some.
And maybe next week. It's probably not going to be today.
Right.
Actually, knowing Microsoft, right now would be an excellent time to drop this build.
Why?
Friday night, we're away from home. But
there's Gabe
All right now. Gabe All has probably flown home already. probably next week.
Yeah, and then we should talk about Bash.
Of course.
All right, let's talk about Bash.
Yeah.
First of all, it's Bash, not Linux. And
right.
I think a lot of people are, because of the word Ubuntu, are thinking this is Linux.
Yeah.
Linux is an operating system kernel, and that's not present.
Leah, remember...
The guy who worked on this actually, I think, positioned it really well for those who use Linux. This is the reverse of Wine. Wine is a set of API calls that duplicate Windows APIs on Linux to allow you to run some Windows software. That's kind of what Ubuntu's developed is a
well, a except that it's command line only, right? You're not going to be running Linux X Windows apps or whatever you call
those. No, but you can run out of the box Linux command line.
Yeah, by the way, the less said about this, the better, Leo. But
hey, you have a penguin right here.
This is the best thing ever, Paul. I am so excited because most people have had to use PuTTY and Cygwin,
right?
To try to do kind of the normal sysadmin stuff that Linux.
Listen,
guys.
We're going to get through this one, Leo, but the point is it's aimed at developers, it's aimed at admins, it's aimed at people who are using Telnet today to remotely access some Linux or Windows server. It's interesting to me that they partnered with Ubuntu. I mean, I think this is an ever broader step into this kind of embrace of open source that makes me so sick to my stomach at Microsoft.
You find this upsetting?
I literally am a little queasy right now talking about this, yeah. It's okay.
What is that penguin hat?
I saw Jeffrey Snover, by the way, this morning with Raphael. We were walking down the street, and I had to resist just hugging him and crying,
I think this is, he's the PowerShell guy, of course.
Yeah.
PowerShell is also adding, some of those features like SSH. By the way, they call it Bash, but really, it's not even Bash, because if you wanted to run, say, Z Shell, I presume that you could.
So I don't know about that. I actually think it is Bash, and I think they're open to other shells. I think the way it's going to work is the way that PowerShell works today, the way the cmd.exe works, where you get a command line window, and from within that window, you can run the command line Linux tools and utilities.
You have to get and install any Linux, not any, because if you're... Screen and TMUX, for instance, are not, but standard ELF builds from Ubuntu can be run. And run, which means Z Shell, unless they, for some reason, haven't supported it, wouldn't.
Yeah. I don't know.
So you don't have to have Bash.
And I'm not going to contemplate that, Leo. That's terrible. The point is, you can do file manipulation, you can copy files.
I use a Mac because I want a pop good command line. I don't want a DOS command.
So,
Jeffrey on PowerShell,
I'm not an expert in the Linux command line, and I never will be. But I think the point of this is to remove another barrier. I really don't think there's a huge audience for this, but this is a way to ensure that people are using Linux as their only desktop. It's less of a reason for someone to move to a different platform. It's less of a reason for someone to have two machines.
Windows is their only.
Yeah.
Windows. You said Linux is your only desktop.
Can we cut that out? Yep. And this is the year of the desktop Linux on Windows.
Right.
Finally, it's
happened.
Yep. As Richard Stallman foresaw, those many years ago.
He's not, I'm sure not. Because most of these applications are applications.
Let's talk about a happier topic.
Okay.
How about Centennial?
How about that Centennial?
Guys, this is good news.
It is good news. And you know what? Paul's feeling depressed about it, but the audience at Build was very receptive when they announced it.
Which makes me more depressed, by the way.
Sorry.
No, it makes me want to use Windows more because the lack of a good SSH or SCP a whole bunch of stuff made it that...
Leo, as you're talking, are you breaking out some Linux Mint thing so we can wallow in this now?
I don't use Mint, my friend. I use a real operating system, Debian. Or Arch. But the point is, there are a lot of sysadmins who use SSH. Installing Cygwin was never a very good
right.
This makes Windows much more useful. And yes, it's Windows.
Right.
It's not Linux, it's Windows.
No. Right.
It's kind of, isn't it, aren't they using the bridge, the Android bridge that they killed?
Oh.
They did kill the Android bridge, but they're using a subsystem that's called Windows on Linux, I believe.
What?
Yeah, there it is.
There's a blog post from a guy, Ubuntu guy, who's been working on this in secret with Microsoft for months. And he said, basically, that this is using, because Android's not this one. This is using the tools from the Android.
It makes sense, right? It's the same basic system.
Yeah.
And he said, Visual Studio. And almost threw my coffee cup. So I went to the Bash command line. I did everything I needed to do, and then I recompiled it in Visual Studio, and it all worked.
Right.
I think really don't underestimate this. This is a really interesting move, and I think a very good move. makes me happy. Yeah, it doesn't make Paul happy. All right, you may move along.
My mother taught me that if I had nothing good to say.
Aww.
I usually ignore that advice.
Right.
Well, you'll so be speaking of bridges.
Yeah. How about Centennial? You're
about
happier
Centennial?
About that, right?
All right. So this is our.
Let's bring up a guest to help us talk about Centennial.
So, yeah, Raphael, come on up. By the way, you have to clap for Raphael. Because I know it embarrasses him.
And you have to wear this.
Okay.
All the guests have to wear the hat.
He looks good in that thing. Now, how are we going to hear Raphael would be my question.
Yeah, the problem is he likes wearing the hat.
He does. He was wearing it a lot.
I think he might have slept in the hat.
It's very nice.
So I'm using this mic?
Yes.
It's not.
Oh, hey, it works.
Yay.
And did it work?
You sound better than they do. I hate to tell you.
Oh, because we can't hear him here.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's sitting next to you. You should be able to
hear him. No, we can hear him.
Well, we can hear him.
Oh, I see that everybody in the room.
Project, Raphael. Oh, there he is.
Test, test, test. Hello.
Yeah.
All right, so what's Centennial and what did they change or do this week?
So Centennial is a project that Microsoft's working on to bring the, 16 million desktop applications out there into kind of the new world, the universal Windows platform world. I mean, that's a lot of apps, right? That's your Photoshops, your Paint.net, your 7-Zip, and a bunch of million of other apps. So it's to kind of bring them into this new world and give them access to the APIs that that we're using in the universal land, containerize them so they're a little safer, but they do have full access, and enable a bunch of scenarios that we want to use, like for example monetization. We want to be in the store. We want to monetize our apps.
Yeah, so you can use UWP features like live tiles, notifications, whatever.
Yeah, and here at Build, the teams here, I actually sat down with them and converted my app. Some of you may have used Ear Trumpet. It's just a silly little sound mixer that we wrote.
Sounds like a farting app kind of a thing.
Yeah, it's just a mixer that exposes the Windows 10 Universal apps as well as desktop apps. And you can change the volume for every individual app, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But I just gave them the bits, the installer. It's just a dinky little Win32 app that's built with in a setup. And they converted it on the spot, took 1 minute, done. I was ready to publish. I mean, I could just slap an icon on there, make it look pretty. But
So you have this to distribute here, right? Can we sideload it?
No, it still needs to be signed.
Yeah.
And you still need the bits from the build that's coming out next week. But
if you could just hold that there.
But just real quick. So when we talk about Centennial apps, they are not virtualized, right?
No.
They have access to everything in Win32 land, so you can poke the registry, you can poke the file system with some minor caveats.
It's a solid system.
You can, what's that?
Nothing, go ahead.
you can talk to drivers on the system. You can do a bunch of COM, .NET, Win32, Win16. You can do all that stuff. But then you also get access to the UWP APIs. You can use the new web authentication broker. You get the updater from the store. You never have to write an updater again. You can tie into the feedback hub, which I'm working on right now. It's really the best of both worlds, so it's pretty awesome. I'm excited about it. It's more exciting than a Call of Duty map pack.
Uh-oh. Shots fired.
Yikes. Well, I'm more excited about this than I am about Bash. So.
Yeah.
Let's get back to that Bash thing.
Yikes.
Gabe's excited about Bash. Yeah.
What's that?
Paul.
Oh, I'll be fine, Leo.
It's Paul.
I'm only on the second stage of grief with the Linux thing. Give me a couple more weeks.
Right. And it's free to convert the app, right?
It's free.
Right.
Yeah, it's free. It'll be in the bits next week. If you're an App V person, all the Centennial apps will be App V ready. Oh. It is based on some of the concepts and technologies in AppV, but it's not AppV. Don't get that confused. The team will correct you immediately.
There's been stuff like this in the past, but basically this is a way to bring something forward from the past, so to speak, because you're never going to rewrite it from scratch in UWP.
Right.
But you can take advantage of many of the features of UWP by just packaging it up essentially in sort of an app V-type package.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you convert the app, can you use it on the phone?
So right now I believe it's a UWP that targets just desktop.
Okay.
There may be something later, I'm not sure. But right now it's mainly designed to get you from desktop app, take your first step into the UWP world, and get fully converted. Now, once you're fully converted to UWP, let's say you deploy this and you sit down for a rev to rewrite your UI and do a bunch of other stuff. Once you're full-blown UWP, yeah, you can deploy that Xbox, HoloLens, Windows Phone, etc. So.
Okay.
Hmm.
Nice.
Cool.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I need my hat back.
Right.
All right, what do we get next?
Oh.
Zach Jammert.
Next, we have to talk about what got the biggest standing ovation at Build. It wasn't Bash.
Thank God.
It was all the Xamarin news.
Right, which is awesome.
I know. I've been to so many Microsoft keynotes. I think that's one of the first where I actually saw people stand up and applaud who weren't paid by Microsoft or something.
Nice.
Let's have Richard Campbell come up and talk about Xamarin.
Oh, he's here.
He's here from .NET Rocks.
We should have him on as well.
And Brad, too?
No, not now, but at some point.
Yeah, he's on.
Okay. Oh, we'll do it
then. He's down here.
No, we're going to change what that is, though.
Oh, okay.
Okay. That's okay.
Nice. Thanks for wearing the hat.
There you go.
I love this hat. This hat is great. And, and it's going to be the first time that lice has been spread at Build. So
excellent.
That's a break.
Well, I am staying at the Monster, so that's a possibility.
That's another possibility, too.
Okay.
That's more bed bugs, but okay.
Yikes. So why were you excited, Richard Campbell?
Well, the big thing was pricing.
Yeah.
But I think there's a bigger story there overall. We .NET Rocks.
What's the pricing?
The pricing is free.
Free,
right?
Like really actually free.
Free.
Is it really free like Windows 10 is really free, or is it really free like Linux is free?
Well, it's really free like the community edition of Visual Studio free.
And
you saw the setup there where they showed, now it's going to be included with Studio Enterprise and Studio Pro.
Right, which you would expect because you got for this product.
Yeah, that's, MSDN subscription stuff.
Yep.
Then there's a lot, big round of applause, pause, hit the button again, and community edition.
Right.
Another big applause. And I think it actually flustered Scott Guthrie. Which is not normal.
No.
Yeah.
That's a very odd, he looked a little rattled by just how much applause that actually was, but it means that the free edition of Studio has these tools in it as well.
Right.
Yep.
And if you're a CTO type, and this is a conversation we've had on .NET Rocks before, you spend, for every developer, an MSDN subscription, probably $1,200 or so, $1,300, and you buy a tool set, right? The Telerix, the DevExpresses, the Interfagistics, another $1,200.
Yeah.
That's what you spend every year on your devs. Then along comes Xamarin, who says, so you want to develop for iOS? That's $1,000.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, and Android? That's $1,000. Per developer, per year.
Yep.
So from an optics perspective, and I'm not saying there wasn't value there, because there was. If you're making money on mobile apps, that tool did a lot for you.
Yep.
But from an optics point of view, it was basically doubling the cost of the average developer per year from a from a CTO. That was a hard sell to make.
Yeah.
Now, they fuss when you want to spend $50, so...
Sure.
Right.
A couple $1,000s is hard.
Yeah.
But, so I think the price was the one that grabbed us. Obviously, the flattening of the licenses, going to all MIT, a lot of LGPL is going to go away.
Yeah, were you surprised by the open sourcing part of it?
No.
You weren't?
But it's only the stuff that's going in your code, too, right?
Right.
Just
right.
The platform pieces. The tooling's not open source.
Right, that's right.
But that's fine. This is what Microsoft's been doing with a lot of their stuff.
Yeah.
So it's more of the same for that. The other point is that we're still struggling with hybrid mobile development.
Right.
There's no clear winner right now on the right way for the average developer who's not a mobile development specialist to be successful building mobile apps. And there's pressure for the organizations to make mobile apps for their customers in the mid-band development range. you can always get an expert to build whatever you want.
Right.
And mobile development's always hard, right? I mean, I would argue even more important than what we saw with Xamarin, that iOS emulator. You know, and Miguel sort of casually said, I don't need my swivel chair anymore.
Right.
Because the development cycle for mobile development is, you know, you don't just write all your code and ta-da, mobile app. You write a little code, you compile it, you put it on the device, you know, get it deployed, you play with the device for a while, you're unhappy with something, you go back to your code. That cycle, the amount of time it takes you to get around that iteration, right, that is a direct measure of your productivity. And in old, you know, regular web development or old school client development and so forth, you got to run that cycle very fast. Mm-hmm. As soon as you introduce a phone or more than one phone, that cycle speed drops way down. So getting good emulators, getting ability to update and continue to run, which we saw that demonstrated as well, that's all about getting around that cycle faster. And that makes developers a lot more productive.
Yeah.
So I think bringing all this in-house, that's the impact it has, is we're getting better at describing how developers will build mobile apps for customers where all the customer cares about is it works on their phone.
Yeah.
Not that it's necessarily the fastest app or every feature under the sun, but it works on everybody's stuff.
And there's literally nothing like this, right, where you can target these different environments from the same place at the same time. It is
not easily, right? Yeah. I mean, there's other approach. There's the Cordova approach, right? And that's much more a mobile mindset, but it has similar problems. And and its cycle time is equally awkward.
Yep.
Anyway, I still think the moneymaker in all of this, that's Xamarin Test Cloud.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not cheap. Once you spend a little time with it, you will never go back. It is profound to test your web page or your app across 1,000 devices at once and get video of what happened.
Mm-hmm. Actually, Richard, maybe you know the answer to my most pressing question about Xamarin. Is Charles Petzold now a Microsoft employee?
I do not know the question. I saw Charlie Petzold at the party last night.
Okay.
Oh.
So he's around. Yeah. You could ask
maybe.
Him.
Yep.
But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. You know, I think Scott Goo said it. He said, you know, it's been 10 days.
Right.
Yeah. Like, we are so early.
It does feel like it's not, it's been longer than that. So
yeah.
No, but yeah.
But it's the longest job interview in history.
Right.
Yes.
We found the old video of Don Box.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we were there.
Yep. Singing to Miguel.
And Carl was in that.
Carl was the guitar player.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's a long time
ago. And on the runtime.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yep.
Nice.
Yeah, PDC 2003.
Yep.
Yep.
All the words changed. That's when Novell was the important part of the equation.
That's right.
Yes. Wow. Yeah.
That's what I got.
All right. Well, thanks.
Awesome.
You bet.
Thank you.
Thank
nice.
You.
Thank you.
I don't get to keep a hat.
No.
All right.
I don't think you guys can. You guys hear
me? Oh, okay.
Yes, we can hear you. Say yes, we can hear you.
Yeah,
yes, we can hear you.
Jeez. All right. Because I was talking to you, but nothing happened. My mouth is moving, but nothing came out. So keep going, though. I think this is good. I don't have anything to add anyway. Unless you want to talk about the Bash shell again.
No more Bash talk. We have to keep Paul off the ledge.
Yeah, just
I'm really close to an edge.
You guys run with it. I'm just I'll just be listening.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's get Tom up and we'll talk about.
Let's talk about Xbox and HoloLens, and we have Tom Warren from The Verge. Come on up, Tom. We're making everyone wear the hat. Come on.
I'm just
Nice.
All right, we won't force you to wear that.
Hello. What am I here for? I think I'm here to talk about Windows Phone.
So Xbox, no, Tom.
It'll be a short conversation, I fear.
Yeah, it's a short one.
Although maybe we should address that at some point. But
yeah.
Universal Windows Platform Apps and Store on Xbox.
Yep.
And you have done a lot of stuff with HoloLens this week too, so maybe some.
Yeah, so I checked out HoloLens on Tuesday. We played with it for about, I'd say, 3 or 4 hours. Also get to sort of see it deconstructed, all the chipsets and stuff. We'll have that up sort of next week, I think. But yeah, the actual experience itself. So we've seen it. We saw it in January last year. We saw it build last year. In January, it was super impressive. There was Minecraft and... I think the field of
Mars was there.
Yeah, Mars and all that sort of stuff. And the field of view back then was like super impressive. It was really immersive. And I think it got worse at build last year. And it just didn't seem quite as it was in January. And I think this week, we tried it out on the actual final dev unit, and I don't know that it's actually improved, but it feels more comfortable, and it doesn't feel like it's clipping.
So what do you think about that? I mean, it's obviously a big topic, right?
Yeah.
So when you see those demos they have on stage, a gigantic cat truck or whatever, and you know all the different things to do, I mean, do you think that, you know, moving your head around, you've used it a lot now? I mean, is this a problem?
So I think it works better. Obviously, it works better on smaller holograms. Like that, there's no getting away from that. Like that one that they showed in the day two keynote. Mm-hmm. That's just, I don't know, for want of a better word, but you know, that's just BS. You'd have to step back like 30 foot in a room.
Yeah, because you'd be pretty much looking at, you would really.
Yeah, you're looking at a letterbox of it. Yeah.
Okay.
And so those don't work so well. So I played Robo Raid, which they showed, I think, at E3 last year.
Yep.
That was great. And I think the most impressive part of it, aside from obviously the holograms and stuff, is the spatial sound. So stuff like that in that game, when there's like robots appearing from behind your ears and stuff.
Hold the mic.
Oh, sorry, a little high. And yeah, there's like robots appearing from behind your ears. It makes you like turn around and focus your shooting on them and stuff. So that's cool. And then there was Conker, which I think was probably one of the better games or like applications of this stuff, because it followed your gaze around the room.
Nice.
And it obviously tracks your environment as well. So it doesn't force you to look at like a giant hologram, because it's a tiny little hologram that's running around the room. And then there's another game, I can't remember what it is.
And fitting the glasses is different now also, right? Like before they had to actually fit them, like measure between your eyes,
so,
right?
So now they have like a calibration utility essentially. What you do is you look at a hologram in front of you, and then you close one eye and you literally hold your finger up and you do.
And then there's a puff of air and.
a puff of air and you disappear into the floor.
Someone else has to drive you home.
Yeah, so that's obviously easier. I feel like the calibration stuff obviously makes it a little bit better per person, but we had like our video guys were trying it out and they didn't calibrate it and it was working fine for them.
Did you have a chance to use the
clicker?
No, I saw it. I didn't actually try it, but okay. But then obviously you had the bloom. Is it the bloom? Which brings up the hovering start menu, and that essentially like follows you around, follows your gaze.
Right.
And but you could drop holograms wherever you want with that and stuff.
Nice.
But yeah, but overall from using it from like last year to this year, I feel like it's got better, but it's still definitely field of view issues. So, yeah.
Okay.
So. And what about Xbox? There was some new stuff too, right?
Yeah. So the Xbox stuff is like they're finally allowing developers to bring their Windows 10 apps to the Xbox One. So they talked about it in the keynote on day one. They didn't show any examples, and then on day two they said Nickelodeon. NASCAR, yep. I think some other apps that are coming. Nothing too incredibly exciting, but I think we're going to see a bunch of those, because it seems there's a couple of sessions on it this week, and it seems to be really easy just to port your app across. You've also got to do a bit of UI work and stuff, but in terms of basic apps, especially like entertainment apps, I think it's going to be super easy.
Did you get a feel for whether it would be the same kind of open ecosystem you see in the Windows Store on PCs and phones? Or?
Yeah, so they said they're merging the Windows Store and the Xbox App Store. Yeah. Like, the Xbox App Store doesn't really exist, because it's like a... To be a developer for the Xbox, it's like a real secret.
You have to be Activision.
Yeah.
basically.
So I don't know entirely what that means, and I don't think they fully explained that, whether they're like going to restrict it down or anything.
Okay, so maybe we'll learn more.
I get the feeling that they're going to keep it fairly open. So. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Cool.
All right.
Anything else strike you from...
Want to talk about Windows Phone?
Oh, yeah, we should.
Actually, why not? Okay. So how many times did they mention the phrase Windows Phone in the keynote, would you say?
Yeah, so they didn't talk about Windows Phone at all, did they, really?
Once.
Terry Myerson did.
Yeah. So you got an amazing quote from Terry Myerson, and I sort it was weird because I kind of offline walking around thinking about it, I thought, well, he must have meant the show when he said this year, you know? And then I went back and read it again, and no, he didn't.
No, he went a bit broad.
He said this.
Yeah.
So what do you...
I think they're just... They're just being honest with it now. Like that's not their focus. And I think personally, the only way that they can really not necessarily win mobile, but like start to get in there is do what like Google did with Internet Explorer. Like, they put that toolbar in Internet Explorer. They convince people to switch to Chrome.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they're going to do with Cortana.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you're going to see across, essentially on Android, especially because they have that access. But I think you can see Cortana in iOS apps, in their Outlook for iOS app. And I mean, that's their way of, like, you know.
So what did he exactly say to you? We should repeat. I mean, not word for word.
I don't have the quote, so I don't know.
Not word for word, but the gist.
But he essentially said, it's not our focus for this year. We're still, like, you know, very, very much focused on the form factor of a phone, and the next. Well, I don't know if you said next,
well,
year, but we're going to do exciting things with the phone.
In some ways, it was even worse than that because he said, you know, if you want to focus on exciting new Windows devices, we have HoloLens and we have Surface Hub and we have Xbox, and it was really it went kind of beyond.
I think
where it needed to in a way.
I think that's because in the keynote, they essentially the new opportunities for developers of Windows 10. Weren't like Windows 10 Mobile, it's Xbox One and HoloLens. So it's
and
like,
I, you know, like if you use Windows 10 Mobile, I think you can appreciate that the system doesn't feel as mature as far along as, say, it does on PCs, you know. And I think it's going to need a few more releases just to kind of gel the way that Windows Phone 8X did.
It still feels like a work in progress.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah.
But
so
hopefully
on
next year.
Note.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you,
so.
Sir.
We need to do Brad.
We can add it in when he does. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. I'm still having a problem with my voice.
I can't hear you, Mary Jo. What was that?
So the other thing I thought was super interesting in both day one and day two keynotes was Microsoft talking about bots.
Right.
And the whole thing was kind of like, are bots the new apps? And is the bot platform going to be the way that Microsoft encourages developers to kind of extend apps going forward?
Right.
So we have someone who really dove into that this week, Carl Franklin from .NET Rocks.
I got to say, please do it. It's usually these parts of the Microsoft keynotes where I start nodding off a little bit, but I actually found
this was really
the bots thing to be really, really interesting.
Would you wear the hat?
I'm not sure how I feel about the name.
No hat.
I'm a little under the weather.
Oh, you too.
I'm a little under the weather, so.
Once it drops.
No, I'm thinking that's good.
He noticed
I'm feeling a little fuzzy and pixelated.
Yes.
Oh,
personally. I think it might have been the Xamarin party last night.
Could have been.
Actually, did we tell you we brought you a case of scotch?
Yeah, and we couldn't get it in here.
Oh, I'm sorry. What's today? April 1st.
April Fool. Richard has some scotch for me.
Oh, good. Yeah, I dove into the bots.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the promise of bots goes beyond, you know, what do you want on your pizza, which was a good demo.
It would be for the first half hour.
But imagine, hey, bot, who's customer number 493?
Yeah.
Right.
You know, that's pretty cool.
That is.
And or just being able to parse out in from, you know, your language stuff that you want to know and stuff that you want to do is really, really interesting to me. So, I took a look. I got the Getting Started document because my goal is to make a .NET Rocks bot. Would you guys like that? A .NET Rocks bot?
And what would this bot do exactly?
It would find shows based on the content.
Nice.
Yeah. So what was that show where Carl mentioned something in Better Known Framework about...
Are you asking it like some question about Windows Weekly? And it's like, well, I don't know about Windows Weekly, but on this show...
Yeah,
we spoke about this.
Right. So it'd be nice to be able to say, you know, what's the latest show, or just, you know, how many last week's shows, or
and how where would I mean? So what would the, where do you see the interface for that being? Like, where? Obviously, you're not going to type that into Skype. I mean, so is it on the web?
It could be SMS. It could be email. It could be just about anything. That's one of the cool things about the framework is that they, you know, once you make a bot.
Yeah,
you can just sort of publish it to different places.
Right.
With a
so you could literally send a text message, and your podcast app might pop up and play that exact episode.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's cool.
You could go to a website and have a little chat box if you want, but there's all sorts of ways.
Right.
I did the Slack integration, which is really cool. And so what I did was I went through the documentation. You start with an echo, you know, that just says "you said" and repeats what you said.
Yeah.
And so it took me, I don't know, half an hour to build the bot.
It's called the little sister bot.
Well, that's what happened.
It just repeats back everything you said.
So I unleashed it on my Slack
community. You're stupid.
And everybody was like, hey, bot. And it said, you said, "Hey, bot." And I said, "Oh, my God, it's like my daughter's in here."
Yep.
Right? I know you are, but what am I?
Yep.
I had to turn it off
as soon
as I tested it. But
well, that's what happened with Tay, right? Microsoft's Tay.
Yeah, that's a different story.
That is.
That's sad.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at least Satya acknowledged it. And he said, "Hey."
I know, right.
We turned it off. Going back to the drawing board.
Yep.
I think those were his words.
Yep.
But the documentation for the bot framework is a little incomplete, I thought. Either that or I'm stupid, which could be the case, actually.
Nah.
But it was a little disconnected to go from the controller, which is the Echo bot,
right,
to the iDialogue interface, which you create an object. But I didn't see any way to instantiate that or hook that up to the service part of it. But I'll tell you what was cool. They're getting back to me on that. It's probably something I missed. But but what was cool was the Slack stuff took literally 5 minutes.
Wow.
And it was just copying and pasting APIs, republish API keys, and turn it on. And then it's in Slack, and it was easy to turn off.
So Slack seems like a Slack or any kind of chat-based type thing seems like an obvious place to have a conversation.
Then it'll be Office 365 groups.
Yep.
Will be where Microsoft does it on their own side, right?
Right. Yeah. Okay.
But another really cool thing about it is the sort of DSL, the domain-specific language that I saw on the screen during the keynote. And it's very, very similar to one that I had done myself, because I worked with speech synthesis and speech recognition for a long time. And one of the problems, of course, is you don't want to write code that says, if the person said, "I want,"
it's a giant
then,
statement of just possibilities, like an Infocom game or something.
Right, exactly. So you saw, "I would like a," or, logical or, "I want a," or, all of the possible things that you could say at the beginning of the sentence,
right,
and then sizes of pizza, small or medium or large, mm-hmm, right? And so it turns out that that was easy to do just with C#.
Yeah.
Parsing out strings.
Right.
But they made it so easy for you. Now
they
just
have a graphical designer, basically, right?
Yeah, they have like a GUI.
Yeah.
And not only that, but they'll look at what you're trying to say and come up with all these alternatives for how to say it and how to recognize it, rather. Mm. So I thought that was really, really cool. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Do you understand very well the connection of Bing and the bots? Because it seems like the machine intelligence part and the
Bing and the bots was my band in
high
school.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I think they're just using Bing now because Bing is a search engine that has APIs.
Right. So. But also all the information that they gather in Bing is kind of what they're mining, right?
I think they're...
Well, it's going to be some of it, I think, right?
Some of it.
But I think the issue for now is us as normal users, if we want to go see this, we can install bots in Skype. And what you're really just doing is running a Bing search inside of a Skype window instead of a Bing search on the web. So it's a little lackluster as an example.
Right.
But it's a very, very basic example.
Yeah.
I think any just a little bit of thought, any company that's customer facing or business to business for that matter, where instead of interacting with humans, because let's face it, that's not our favorite thing to do in the world, is it, guys? Girls?
No.
We're kind of, we just like our phones. That's why we do this all the time instead of talking to each other.
Yeah.
So, anytime there's that, there's a possibility that you could write a bot to take care of those things. And, the canonical example of ordering a pizza, renting a car, booking a flight, that kind of stuff. I would rather deal with a bot than have to listen to press one if you're going to Orlando, et cetera.
Absolutely.
I hate that. I feel like I'm being talked down to by a machine.
Well, there's a reason you book flights on the web now instead of calling someone and talking through it. It looks like we have a flight available at 1.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Would you like to be on that flight?
Yeah.
Yes. Did you say yes? Yes. Did you say no?
No.
Did you want Spanish?
So, I'm really looking forward to that, not only as to bring value to our businesses, but... it's a heck of a lot of fun to play with.
Yeah. Plus, now that it's been unleashed, I mean, this is kind of when the magic happens, because there's going to be some crazy use for this that no one at Microsoft had ever dreamed of.
Right.
And we're going to see crazy, crazy things happen.
It'd be a great interface for an adventure game, for a text adventure game.
Yeah.
But I think if you think of it as a UI,
now you're
beginning to get it.
And you could almost continue from time to time on different interfaces. You could be on your phone and you go to the, you're on a web interface on the computer. I mean, you could almost see it moving around with you.
Mary Jo, what do you think? you, is there any place in your daily life where a bot would help?
Man. I'm a little skeptical of the bots, I guess, but I'm intrigued.
They'll find out.
Don't tell them. I don't know. I really didn't think about it from a user perspective. I was thinking more about it as kind of the way Microsoft is moving the Bing development platform ahead. Because they've been trying to license the Bing APIs for a long time, and I feel like that only has picked up mixed traction. And so I think this is them kind of saying, okay, what's an easier way of kind of packaging up some of this stuff and getting developers to work with these as like building blocks? So that's kind of how I was thinking about it.
Yeah, and it might be a little confusing with Bing as the key, as the brand.
I know.
Because it's, we think, search engine.
Right.
But in fact, when you have a bot, it's code that you run that passes in all of these details from the language that you then parse out and do whatever you do.
Yeah.
So you could pass that on to Bing if you'd like to as a search engine.
Right.
But I guess they're using that brand for these services.
What do you think about that name? I mean, why are they, not Bing, but why are they using the name, why are they using the name bot for something that is a software service, essentially?
Well, bots, a bot is a sort of robotic, like human faking.
Yeah, intelligence.
Something you talk to or chat with.
I think of it as little, you know, robot insects running around doing your bidding. You know?
I'll tell you what's weird for me as a user, though, and you guys may have had this experience. You go to a website and you need, you know, you're looking for something and a little thing pops up and says, "Hi, I'm Thomas. Can I help you?"
Yep.
And I'm like, "Are you really Thomas?"
Yeah. And you really look like that picture?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or you're some guy in a bloodstained white T-shirt and.
But you know, all you have to do to test it out is go surreal on them.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I'm trying to order a plaid squirrel.
Nice. Right.
And see if they actually.
He's like,
take
"Let me see if we have that in stock."
Yeah.
And you know.
And then it's.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Or you're at the wrong store.
But if they go, "What are you talking about?"
Yeah.
It might be.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that's it.
Yeah, cool.
Nice, thank you, sir.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, okay. How you doing, Carl? Can
Good.
You hear me?
I can.
I'm about 50 miles north of you in Petaluma.
Yeah, you're looking a little fuzzy and pixelated too today. Did you have fun last night?
It's not coming.
Probably.
Oh, in fact, now that I see that everybody's sick, I'm thinking I might stay up here instead of going to the meetup.
Probably a good idea.
Yeah.
Sounds like you're all sickies.
Just I don't know.
I know.
Off.
Yep.
Dry throat.
Yep.
That's what happens at conferences.
Oh,
but it's been nice talking to you guys.
Yeah, thanks, Carl.
Thanks, Carl.
Thank you.
All right, bye.
Thank you, sir. You know, we've been here for almost an hour, and I just figured out that the reason I could hear Leo's voice sort of inside my head is it was coming out of my computer.
Oh, geez.
Yep.
Oh, nice.
All right, this one's going to be all you.
Yeah, I'm going to try to talk
so,
a little.
So, good luck.
So, I'm not going to talk a lot about this because I can't talk. But I wanted to talk about what Microsoft showed at the show about Office as a platform. And they spent a lot of time on this on day two. They talked about the Office Graph and the Microsoft Graph. They talked about Office add-ins and Office connectors. And I kind of feel like this is them going back at the idea of trying to get people to extend Office and build into Office their own applications and extensions to turn that into a platform. So, you know, Windows is a platform. They want bots to kind of be the platform of the future.
Mm-hmm.
But Office is something, they've got this giant install base with Office 365 and Office, and they want to capitalize on this with developers. And the way they are thinking about doing this, kind of the core of it to me is the Microsoft Graph. And what the Graph is it's all the, it's kind of like an endpoint for Office 365 APIs that they bundle all together and call it the Microsoft Graph. And I don't know if you guys remember this, but I think it was a year ago or so, somebody asked Nadella, "What's your favorite Microsoft API?" Because of course someone has a favorite API.
Sure. Who doesn't?
All right, and he said Microsoft Graph. Which at the time was called Office 365 API. Yeah. And the idea is to try to get people who are developers to kind of tap into things like groups and mail and calendars and even and down to the level of the applications in Office.
But like, all at the same time.
Right, all at the same time through these extended through this single endpoint. So, you know, it's an interesting vision. It's one they're kind of coming back around again and pushing, because for a while they were trying to get people to build Office Store apps, and they've kind of moved a little beyond that, I think. But that, I just wanted to touch on that because I think it was another key theme here, along with bots. I think they're looking for, like, what's the next
platform. The same
platform,
sort of online services story. The type of thing that maybe only Microsoft can really deliver.
Right.
Which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
It's funny to me that they're still doing kind of old school add-ins in a way, too, right? Like, they used to have, remember there was an Office pane that people could write apps to, and now they're talking about integrating with the Ribbon. But I think the cool thing there is that it works cross-platform, so you can write these add-ins that work on, obviously,
Mac
right, Office, Windows, Office for Mac, and also the Office mobile apps for, I believe, all the platforms, Windows, Android, and iOS. So that's actually pretty interesting, too.
Yeah. That's about all I wanted to say about it. But
that's more than I wanted to say about
it,
but that's
fine.
So actually, let's. I guess we'll have Brad come on up.
Yep. Brad Sams from Petri is going to join us now.
Actually, it'd be better if you didn't clap for Brad. So if you don't mind, maybe we could talk about some of the new Windows stuff that you were mentioning, as well as the Azure
Let's start with Windows. And then he actually wanted to talk about the enterprise, some of the Azure stuff. Yay. So first Windows.
Paul, let me ask you a question.
Brad, first you have to put on the hat.
No. I believe in the sharing economy, but not the sharing of hat economy.
Excellent.
Paul, let me ask you a question. Do you want interactive live tiles?
Nope.
Good, because they didn't announce that.
Oh, really?
No, they did not. So this event, because you're sitting here, I know you did not attend, was right before this session. And Microsoft is talking about some of the things that are coming with Actions, or Toast Notifications, and Tiles. So really, the only thing that was announced on the tile side is that they now have what they call chaseable tiles. So let's say...
So it's like you move your mouse around and it runs away from you?
Only if it's your PC, Paul.
Nice.
No, but what this is if, let's say, you have a news tile and it shows a story. If you click that tile right now, it just opens the app to God knows where, right? Okay. Now, with the chaseable tile feature, it will actually go to that story and bring it front and center so you can actually, get what you're looking for. It's a pretty novel idea, actually.
It is. It's a great idea. I should say it was a great idea in, 2003 when we had it on Windows Mobile. But please continue it. Okay. Yeah.
And then the other kind of large notification or update that they announced is to the toasts. So toasts are going to get a lot more rich. They can have hero images. One of the things that they showed off is actually the weather tile popping out or notification popping out and having the full 5-day forecast along with the current temperature.
That's good.
This is a really kind of useful
rain on your
update.
Desktop.
Yeah.
And I'm actually really happy to see Microsoft taking these notifications seriously.
Yeah.
And other cool things that they announced too, from the Edge team, Edge products or apps that run in that, such as Skype, can now use desktop notifications in the rich format experience. The Action Center icon in the bottom right will now display how many actions or notifications you haven't read. And it's just kind of a good update to saying, like, once you see this stuff, you're like, why didn't they do this at the beginning?
Yeah.
And that's really about it. No tile folders, no interactive tiles. That's not to say they aren't coming, but people were kind of, that's why a lot of people were there. And when they didn't announce it, it was more of a...
So interactive tiles, in other words, they're bringing interactive notifications to Windows 10.
Correct.
Where you could answer a text or snooze an alarm or whatever that might be.
Correct.
And you're saying, so an interactive tile would be like that, but for a tile.
Correct. Imagine being able to potentially reply to an email or a text message on a live tile.
Yeah.
One of the other things that is coming in the Action Center is better contextually aware right-click. So if you right-click on a notification, it will actually give you context-specific action items. So no longer do you just get the generic, let's just clear this, and it's a useless feature. But now it's actually a much more rich experience.
Nice. So,
it should be a good update. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. We'll see what else. I'm of the firm. I'll be curious if Paul or if you guys believe this. I'm of the opinion Microsoft's got a lot more up their sleeve about this stuff that they haven't talked about.
Clearly.
Redstone one.
Clearly.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, they revealed very few features in the keynote. They've revealed more through sessions. There are clearly more to come.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, if you guys walk over to the Inking Center over there, there's actually new buttons and coming settings that you can change on the pen. There's a whole bunch of interface stuff that they haven't talked about, and I think we're going to see that evolve, but I don't know if you guys get any feedback, but a lot of readers, at least on Throt and Petra, are like, hey, they didn't announce much about Redstone.
Right.
Actually, I mean, they really kind of did. I mean, but there's, I think there's a lot more to come.
Yeah, I think the hype was a lot higher for them what they actually showed. Yeah.
Well, I think some of the rumors that came out before the show were based on stuff that really is in development. It's just that they've decided that they're going to pace it out. Remember last year with Windows 10, we had a January event, and by the time we got to build, you know, January was probably the second major event they had about Windows 10. Build would have been the third, and so there was more of a build-up. And this year, this was just the reveal. So it's really kind of fair to compare it to that original Windows 10 event where they kind of said, okay, this is what we're doing. But there was so much more to come.
Right.
You know, after that initial release. All right, let's get to the...
let's get to the real stuff.
If you excuse me, Paul is going to go get a pillow.
The boring stuff, I was going to say, yes.
So I love the enterprise stuff. And Mary Jo and I could go and hang out and talk about this all the time. I actually love Azure, mostly because I think it's the biggest shift in computing we will see potentially in our generation, where we go from on-prem to everything being stored somewhere else. And so when they talk about Azure, like, I perk up saying, hey, let's see what's new and cool. And what they announced, at least one aspect that Mary Jo and I picked up on, were functions, right?
Yeah.
Or as we call it, Microsoft AWS. Oh, sorry. Jeez. Jeez. I could actually feel the crowd get cold.
Take a break right now.
All right, just kidding. I'm going to go to the bathroom.
But Paul, as much as it begrudges me, is not wrong. I like pointing out when he's wrong, but he's not. This is actually a feature that already exists on AWS.
Right.
And what it allows you to do is to do event-driven actions. And it all lives in the cloud, and you only pay for when it's running. Most people refer to this as AWS Lambda. But it's one of the things that says, hey, if you make enough noise as developers, Microsoft will react. And so there, I believe they announced it's in preview. I think you can go get started today. But Azure Functions, I don't know. I think it should be a good comparable one-to-one. And we'll see if Microsoft can ever, you know, kind of best AWS in that scenario. But they're starting.
I talked to Corey Sanders, who works on Azure here at the show. And he was talking about Azure Functions as two kinds of things. It could be a service kind of in its own silo in Azure. Or he actually said these words, I'm not making this up, sprinkled like pixie dust over all the other Azure services.
Like the little marshmallows and Lucky Charms?
Yeah, kind of like that.
Yeah.
So that you could use the functions capability on whatever Azure service you're using. And this is especially key in like IoT scenarios,
certainly,
right? Big data scenarios. So it could be something pretty interesting as it evolves.
And somebody pointed this out who emailed me. They said, Microsoft is getting really micro lately. So we have bots, functions.
Yeah.
We have all these little micro companions that the company is announcing micro.
It's almost like they knew 40 years ago when they started the company what they meant by the name.
Yeah.
Almost.
How long you been sitting on that, Paul?
Well, you just said it.
Yeah.
Can't take him anywhere.
No.
Sorry, Brad.
And then Service Fabric.
Ooh, Service Fabric. They showed off a nice game demo running all that live update to the code. Service Fabric, I think, is going to be, it's one of those things, if you understand what it is, which not everybody did, it took me a lot of reading over, the past month or so to kind of understand how it's going to play out. But the demo was fantastic, right? They're doing live code, and the fact that the code repaired itself on the stage, I thought that was amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, this is code you're talking about that went retroactive after an implementation was made, and then it went back to the normal functionality. If you saw that Azure or Xbox Live has had a lot of outages, it'd be great if they implemented some of this into that.
So, right. This is how the singularity starts, Brad.
Yeah.
And then Paul can go back to Call of Duty and not bothering me.
Yep.
So if you don't know what Azure Service Fabric is, the way that they talk about it at Microsoft in shorthand is Platform as a Service 2.0. Mm-hmm. So when Microsoft originally launched Azure, it was only Platform as a Service. So with Azure Service Fabric, they kind of ripped up what they did with Platform as a Service and started over. And they've used Azure Service Fabric to build a lot of Microsoft's own services and products. So Skype for Business, Event Hubs, Document DB,
Sounds like a train's coming in too.
All of those are built on that.
Yeah, and they also announced some new DocumentDB replication, which I think is a really powerful feature for those of you that have been diving into that. I know that's relatively new for Microsoft, but for those that use it, that cross-regional replication is a big feature. I know that there was actually pretty large applause for that, for those that are dedicated to that environment.
And the really weird thing about Service Fabric that they talked about here, at least I thought it was weird, interesting. They said you can run Azure Service Fabric on any cloud, even on AWS. Like, if you wanted to, you could take Azure Service Fabric, run it on AWS. I asked them if there was actually anybody doing that, and they said there are people doing that. I don't know who these people are, but somebody out there is doing that. And sure.
Charlie Kindle.
Yeah, probably yep. Charlie Kindle. He used to work at Microsoft.
Yep.
But yeah, that shows that they're hearing that message that people don't want to be locked into their cloud. And if Microsoft's very ecumenical about this, right? If you're using one part of their cloud platform, they're happy. If you are on AWS but you're using Service Fabric, they're like, okay, at least we get something out of you. So that's pretty cool that they're doing that.
The future of Microsoft.
We got something out of you.
We'll get something out of you.
Yeah.
But I think it shows really just the mindset of the company these days.
Right.
Is that they want you to use their products as best as you can, but if you need to go somewhere else because they're not holding up their end of the commitment, you're not locked.
Right.
And I think that's why people are gravitating back to them. And I think they know that if you build into the Azure framework, it is possible to move, but it's not going to be easy and it's not going to be an overnight, but they do allow it. So it's a friendly gesture, but at the end of the day, it's not the easiest task to do it.
Yeah.
So.
Cool.
Yep.
Cool. Well, thank you guys.
Brad.
Thank you. How are we doing? We're doing great.
Doing good on time.
Oh, we're going to come in early today, Leo.
Yeah.
In fact, let's just wrap it up right now. No. So we can do some audience Q&A. Yep. Do you guys have any questions, which I won't be able to answer?
I have a question.
The question's going
to – Do we need to give
the first question is going
to
be how we're going to handle that. Is there a way to maybe give them a mic? Leo has a question.
Oh.
Yes, sir.
You didn't hear me, huh? Oh, okay. Let's talk about that bash thing.
One more time.
You think it'd be possible – they're actually asking this in the chat room. You think it'd be possible – to run X window on it and get a graphical user interface and be able to run some graphical Linux programs.
So I don't know possible, but they did say that they were not supporting that.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Which means they don't want it to happen.
And seriously, thank you for bringing it back to Bash.
It's all about Bash.
You can always tell good friends, by the way, they know how to get at you. You know, they know the weak spots. They know how to kidney punch you.
Yeah, I should have done it after a long enterprise conversation.
It's good.
That was me.
It is.
So how can we handle audience Q&A? What's the best approach
there?
Well,
there's that handheld microphone.
Yeah, okay. You have Do you mind being our microphone girl? And yeah. Okay. Thank you, sir. All right. Does anybody have a question in the audience?
It's great to see you guys.
Hey.
Did you hear anything about an Xbox One update hardware-wise?
I didn't. Like I could barely hear you. I'm sorry.
Did you hear anything about an Xbox One update, kind of like the Sony one?
Xbox One update and then?
Hardware update. Hardware.
Oh, the hard. No. So not exactly. I've been hearing rumors that there's something coming E3 timeframe, and I don't know if that means what you're asking about or if it means a slim version of the Xbox that's for entertainment only. I don't remember who kind of came up with this, but somewhere in the press room at one point, someone made the connection between Universal Windows Platform apps arriving on Xbox One and that notion of an entertainment box, or I should say an Xbox One that doesn't play games, suddenly makes more sense when there's a lot of apps you can run on that thing that aren't games, right? And then maybe that might be something they could announce at E3. That's just kind of speculation, but we've known that they at least worked on this thing at one point, and you know, I personally would see value in that thing right now, the way just with the entertainment apps that are available. But if you could open up the Xbox One to more apps, I think suddenly a device like that becomes more interesting.
CRM box?
No, nothing like that.
Oh, okay.
just more general purpose kind of consumer-y types apps. But you're asking about specifically like a V2 hardware. Sorry, you got cut off there.
Yeah, something like support for 4K video, faster processor, that sort of thing.
Earlier this year, Phil Spencer said something about upgradable hardware, and I think a lot of people took that the wrong way. There were a lot of comments about what are we going to do? Open up our Xbox and replace the video card and replace the RAM? And I don't think that's what he meant. I actually think that Microsoft and Sony are going down that same path, that they realize that the old way of doing console generations, where it's a several-year lifespan with this, basically the same hardware, that the same capabilities, essentially, is not the way it can be going forward. And that even though it seems a little radical, if you compare what they're talking about to the way we buy cell phones and how the apps and games that run on cell phones, I should say smartphones, work with, you know, X number of previous generations. It's not hard to imagine a PlayStation 4 or PlayStation 4K or an Xbox One and Xbox One 4K where the same game is released, and if you play it on the older platform, you get 1080p or less, I guess, on the Xbox One, and you get 4K maybe on the new one, but it's the same game, right? It's not, that's not that hard to imagine. And other than that, you're essentially getting the same experience, you know, other than graphical fidelity, essentially, and maybe the ability to have VR happening on that console. I think that by focusing on HoloLens so much, the VR is kind of snuck up on the side, and it's clearly a very big deal. There's so many companies doing VR. It's a big thing. I'm really surprised they haven't announced something yet in the Microsoft space for VR, and maybe that could be another thing for E3 this year. So we'll have to kind of wait and see. I think E3 is June-ish. So that would be the time frame, if it happens or not, you know.
Thank you.
Thank you. I know you have. Do you have anything you wanted to say about Xbox?
Yeah, I wanted to reveal my gamer tag today.
Yes. Is it Ninja Cat?
It is not.
Do you really have a gamer tag?
No.
Oh.
I know you think I do, but I don't. I should make one up for April Fools.
I think so.
Hadoop Queen. How about that?
Hadoop Queen. Nice.
Hi. With all the excitement about Xamarin being freely available now.
So I'm sorry to interrupt.
Talk a little bit.
Yeah, I can't hear you.
Hi. With all the excitement about Xamarin being available now and the pricing, which is great, have you heard any further clarification on the pricing for Test Cloud?
I missed the last bit. The pricing
Test
of
Labs.
Xamarin Test Cloud.
Test Cloud.
Okay.
No, we have not heard anything about changes in pricing for Test Cloud. But I will tell you something about Xamarin that I learned at the show. I was one of those people who was very surprised that Microsoft actually made this free for enterprises. I thought they would make it free for Community Edition. I didn't think they would go so far as enterprise. And when I asked Microsoft people why they did that, they said, we're using the freemium model with this, and where we think we can upsell the customer is on the cloud. So there may not be a lot of changes in the cloud pricing. That may be where they want to kind of say, hey, we're giving you Xamarin for free, but we're going to charge you when you do the cloud back-end pieces.
Yeah. I mean, with that exception, you have to admit the pricing on Xamarin is best-case scenario. You know, I think you and they kind of did it during the keynote where they said, you know, these two versions of Visual Studio, which are paid, part of MSDN, obviously it's free with that. It's like, well, that's good.
Yeah.
But then they added Community at the end, and the Mac version as well. I mean, it's really neat.
Yeah. Okay. So I remember, you remember there was a couple weeks ago, there was this back and forth that I think it was Tim Sweeney at Epic was going off on UWP, and, you know, this
yep.
Microsoft trying to steal gaming and apps from everybody. There was a throwaway line in one of the keynotes, I think. I don't know if I dreamt it or not, but someone said something about UWP apps and any store.
In any store, that's right.
Yeah, like being able to, I don't know if that was just a side reference to side loading or if that was like,
right.
Is there something going on there that you guys have heard about?
Yeah, and you know, when Tim Sweeney first came out with his comments about Universal Windows Platform games, Phil Spencer responded to him very quickly on Twitter, and that he mentioned that then. He said that Universal Windows Platform apps were an open platform and they would be available from any store, which implies Steam, obviously, and perhaps other means. I believe it was even less of a throwaway line than you're saying, or more than a throwaway line, because I think in the keynote he implied you would even be able to deploy these things just like you do Win32 apps from the web, if I'm not mistaken. I think he said something to that effect. I guess
the point there is it was just never really elaborated on it and said, and hey, look, we're going to show you how you can load a UWP a game from Steam or from the website. Like, if that was really a thing, that would almost be, you know, that's a bigger deal.
Right. I mean, I think we get into a a bad habit when we're, it's before a show, we can say, well, let's just wait until build and see what they say, because obviously this is a developer topic and this seems like the logical place where they would discuss this. And they did bring out Phil Spencer, and clearly this will be all made clear, but it really wasn't. And I'm not sure that E3 is actually the best place to talk about developer, you know, platform aspects.
It's beyond, loading.
But I without being able to lean on, let's wait till the next show before we know, I guess what I would just say is, I suspect that over the course of this year, because the anniversary update will be happening on Xbox One, it's tied to the release of the version for Windows PCs, which is kind of a first, and this stuff is intended for that time frame, that, you know, maybe we'll learn more about that stuff in that time frame.
I mean, the only way to bring this up at E3 is, you know, you bring Gabe Newell out on stage and say, hey, Steam has now got, you know, UWP app, and, you know, we can load all your Steam games, and and then hell freezes over.
Sure. So, if you are a hardcore gamer, I don't think you're going to be buying any Universal Windows platform games anytime soon, regardless. So, I think they will tick off boxes. They'll do the VSync. They'll add the other capabilities, the ability to put overlays on so you can see the frame rate. I think that stuff happens, but it's not going to be June or July this year where suddenly these games are the equivalent of a Steam game and it doesn't matter where you go. I mean, so, it's an open platform. It's not an open source platform. You know, they'll improve it.
Oh, hey. So I noticed there's Surface Books everywhere here, obviously. But they did talk about, you know, the frameworks working on Apples, and on the stage they had a mixture of MacBooks and Surface Pros. But where's your Surface Pro?
Where's mine?
Mine's are your Surface Book.
This is a ThinkPad. It's not a MacBook. So just it's not running Chrome OS or anything. I brought this because I'm reviewing it. I needed to do real world battery life tests and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
I mean, this is a wonderful computer, but honestly, I at this point, I mean, aside from cost, because Surface Books are expensive.
Yeah.
If I were gonna just pick one laptop and go with that, it would be a Surface Book.
Okay.
And I had a Surface Book. It was a loaner from Microsoft, and I'm super cheap. This computer that I bought a couple years ago, it still works just fine. It's the Acer S7, and I don't need a new PC right now, so I didn't decide to buy one.
She will beat that into the ground.
I will.
Yeah, it's true.
I noticed there was a booth specifically for people with Surface Books to get help.
Yeah.
And I thought about Leo, because the guy was basically like giving out his personal phone number to call him because he was having problems.
Wow.
Get that for me, will you, Paul?
I'm sorry.
What did he say?
I didn't.
It doesn't matter. I'm sorry.
We heard you, Leo. But also, HoloLens went on sale yesterday.
So $3,000.
That's right.
Yeah, $3,000. Yeah.
Although, I mean, look, it's a Microsoft show. So you're going to see more Lumias than you would normally out in the world. You're going to see more Surface devices than maybe you would. Although, I travel a lot. I see Surface devices in the real world. I do find that to be very interesting. There are a lot of Surface Books here, and it's not just Microsoft, guys. I mean, I think for this audience in particular, the Surface Book is kind of the perfect, you know, mobile developer workstation at this point.
Yeah, they were really pushing it for the developers.
Yeah, there's a reason you see them, and not just because some of them are Microsoft guys.
Yep.
Yeah. Sure. Hi. With regards to Xamarin and it being free and open source and even to the enterprise level, do you think that it'll replace anything such as people...
I'm sorry, could you just speak up a little bit?
Do you think it'll replace anything with regards to like Eclipse or Xcode coming in, or even new developers coming in starting with Android, or even just the developers themselves? Do you think it's going to replace it at a complete level?
So Xamarin is a very Microsoft/.NET/C# type, you know, solution. It's really designed for Microsoft developers who want to expand into those worlds. I'm not a developer, but I mean, I look at this stuff a lot. And when you think about Eclipse or Android Studio, if you look at Xcode, you look at Visual Studio, these are three very different environments, different platforms. You typically use very different languages, you know, Objective-C and Swift on Apple, or Java or C++ on, you know, Android Studio, whatever. We're at the point where you really need a team of people to make these different apps. You have certain number of people over here on Android using their tools. You have certain people over here, and so forth. And so I think the thing that's neat about the Xamarin stuff is that it allows people to standardize on a particular environment, language, and a platform, and not have to have multiple machines, like, you know, he was saying about swiveling, you know, from Mac to PC or whatever. I don't think that it, well, I mean, who knows what the future holds, but
Microsoft is a fairly unique solution. I think it's going to be a good one for a lot of people. But, I mean, obviously, if you are a iOS-oriented mobile app developer, I mean, you're going to have Macs and you're going to use Xcode, and you're going to use Swift and Objective-C. And I don't think that's going to change, but I think this just opens up those worlds to the, I don't remember, they really didn't say a figure, but the some several million Windows developers to allow them to go to these other places too. And I think that's super important. So I don't think it replaces it.
Yeah.
If that answers your question.
Hear me? Yeah. At the first keynote, when Terry Myerson was announcing the anniversary update, he said, coming in the summer for free, an update to Windows 10. And I was wondering whether that was telegraphing an extension of the 1 year.
Sure.
All right. So I actually asked about that. Would people who are still on Windows 7 and 8 be eligible to get that for free? And they won't comment. Not surprising, right?
Did you ask Terry when we...
I did not ask Terry that, but I asked other people.
I think he would have gotten feisty at that question.
Yeah. I mean, right now the end of the free promotion is July 29th. So if this build comes out before that, then obviously you can. But
Yeah.
We don't know. And, they're not going to say yet because they're still trying to convince more people to go Windows 10.
You know, the one thing we don't know about the anniversary update is whether it includes any new features that are specific to new hardware platforms, right?
Right.
And I think that's something maybe we learned about over time. As we move forward, it becomes less and less of a big deal to allow people on previous computers to move forward to Windows 10, right?
Yeah.
If you can't take advantage of Windows Hello, if you can't take advantage of whatever other new features there are. It's like, well, you know, it's okay, so it's a new UI. You get the apps, I guess, and all that kind of stuff. But
so it's like Windows Phone then, right?
Yeah, yeah. So
and if anyone wants to know, if you have the icon, we still don't know if you're going to get Windows 10.
Right.
Still don't know. You're still on the maybe list.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Yes, uh-oh.
Uh-oh, this guy.
Alan, can we help you with something?
Yeah, so out of those numbers that we have, like 270 million Windows 10, Windows 10 devices now, 270 million, the number of Windows 10 devices that are out right now. Have you heard any breakdown in terms of like enterprise, consumer, tablet, desktop, upgrades, new installs, or anything like?
No, I mean, They're commingling machines and, you know, install types and all that stuff. I think it's fair to, you could look at the number of computers that were sold over these quarters and sort of do the math on this, and you could figure out a little bit, something pretty close to how many Xbox Ones there are. You know, we know the number of Lumia phones, which you know, you know better than anybody,
right.
Represents, you know, 97% of all Windows phones in existence or whatever. So, no, I don't really see them doing that.
Right, like that new figure, 270 million. Like, how many of that is Xbox One? We don't know. How many is IoT boards? We don't know.
Right. We can infer some of it. But, I was thinking about, you know, with the previous questions about the free upgrades. I mean, at some point, if you do 2 years of free upgrades from previous versions of Windows, does that in any way color Microsoft's ability to get to 1 billion devices more quickly? Does that make it less notable of an achievement, or does it not matter? Does it really matter at all where those things come from? I guess it's kind of hard to say, but
I'm thinking about it more from a developer perspective. So
as a developer,
you want to kind of see the addressable market for your app. And if out of the 270 million, 200 IoT, Raspberry Pis,
you're right.
Or whatever.
That's all right. So that. Actually, sorry, that's an excellent question, and they should address that, but actually they haven't to date, so that's a really good question.
We could try asking.
We could, let's try that. That's a good question. Yeah, because you want to know where to put your resources.
Right.
You know, yeah, should you bother supporting Xbox or IoT or whatever,
right.
As someone who's still on Windows Phone 8.1, is it in this time frame worth going to Windows 10, Windows 10 phone or?
What phone is it?
Samsung ATVS.
What? All right. First of all, I have a lot of phones. I'm going to give you one for free. That's ridiculous. No, I don't think so.
I know. We were talking about this week. If you are still using Windows 8, phone 8.1, and then you see Windows Mobile 10, in some ways it's a downgrade.
Yeah.
Feature-wise.
Yeah. User experience-wise, you know, it's weird because it's new and it's different. So I think, you know, at first you're probably willing to kind of experiment with it and play with it. But I do feel like Windows 10 Mobile is the least mature of the Windows 10 variants and the least well adapted to that form factor.
But the reason to go is universal Windows apps.
Theoretically, right? Right. So in other words, if you were making the transition from Windows Phone 7 to Windows Phone 8X and now maybe to Windows 10 Mobile, at some point, some of the apps you use may only be released or updated on the newer platform. And if that, I think that's the way you make that kind of decision.
Yeah.
I don't think we're at that point with Windows Phone 8.1 where you need to worry about it yet. Like, I don't know that there's some big bang universal Windows platform app that is only on Windows Mobile 10 that makes it worth the jump, but I guess that would be specific to you. But I just noticed a very obviously pushing a lot of phones back to 8.1. You know, how much cleaner it looks, how more cohesive it seems, how much better it performs, you know, how much more reliable it is. It was a little depressing in a way. I mean, because I like to kind of live on the new stuff. And on those devices, I mean, Windows Phone 8.1 was better.
Yeah.
You know, Icon users, you know, even on an Icon, a high-end phone. I mean,
I know. Every time somebody says to me, oh, I can't wait to get Windows 10 Mobile, and I say, why?
You're almost better off
just sticking.
There's
never an answer. It's like, I just think it's the latest thing, so I should want it.
I'm not trying to suggest that not being able to get an upgrade is a feature or a benefit, but, you know, for short term, it's maybe not as horrible as some people might think.
With the integration of the notifications and Android phones happening, did you hear anything more about like running Android apps on Windows Phone or Windows or anything like that?
No.
No.
We keep hearing some people think that's where universal apps may become that, right? Like it could be universal apps even on other platforms or Android apps on, you know, Windows platforms, but we don't have anything real to say that's the strategy.
Yeah, and it is interesting too when you look at the Bridges announcements they made last year's build. They didn't really follow up on a lot of them. They didn't. They mentioned Centennial very specifically because now they have this new deliverable. Right. The Android one was obviously canceled, and honestly, it was because those apps ran too well. I mean, it was too easy just to get pure Android apps running on Windows Phone. It would kind of ruining the point of universal Windows platform apps. I suspect that, you're welcome, that it would be very easy to make that happen, but I think that's kind of contrary to their platform needs with the universal Windows platform.
So. Yep.
Anybody else? Oh, there's one over here.
I wanted to ask about the Skype Universal app that they talked about last week.
Yeah.
So they're killing off the the separate apps in Windows 10. And around mobile, it was really ambiguous because you can't kill off the messaging app in mobile unless you kill the SMS. So do you reckon they're going to rip the Skype integration back out of that messaging app again?
I know.
Because it's like a yo-yo thing going on with that.
Yeah.
So I... Go ahead,
they were ambiguous to us, too, when we tried to pin them down.
But I think it's because they don't, I mean, they literally don't know.
I know,
it's funny, Microsoft likes to talk about telemetry and feedback and everything, and there's a weird thing that can happen where you talk to people and they say, yeah, that makes sense. And then they get it and they say, yeah, I don't want to use this. You know, and I think that's what happened on Big Windows with those three apps. And that's something that I think we mirrored our own experience and probably many people's experiences with Windows 10 on PCs, where those separate apps, which do make sense on mobile, don't make sense on Big Windows, where you're used to multiple, you know, big, you know, complex apps that do multiple things. There's kind of a usage pattern that's developed on mobile where apps do one thing, you know, and you know, it makes sense for there to be a phone app that can make actual phone calls plus Skype phone, you know, Skype audio calls, yep. A messaging app that can do the IM/SMS/MMS stuff, and then a video call, a video app just for the video stuff. My expectation is that those three apps do go away in big windows. We have the one hub app, as they call it. And then I think the three apps remain on mobile, and you get if you want it, it's going to be in the store. And honestly, that's no different than it is on Windows Phone today, because right. You can download the Skype app if you want it. So it's just a universal Windows platform replacement for that.
I'm hoping because the SMS handoff stuff, so I'm hoping that this doesn't jeopardize the fact that SMS message comes in.
Hello.
I assume I answer it on my PC in the Skype app now, that type of thing.
I mean, one of the greatest things about Windows Phone 7 when it first came out was that at the time it was Windows Live Messenger, I guess, plus MMS, SMS in one place. It was awesome. That stuff is awesome. And each mobile platform today has some sort of version of doing those things where you can integrate. So I hope on phone they keep that. I mean, I think that stuff, that kind of integration makes sense.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Anybody else? Leo?
No,
yes. Oh, that was Leo. Sorry. Sorry, you're kind of like the voice
I'm
of God
voice
now.
Voice from above. Yes. So the restaurant that we were going to have our event at went out of business.
It did, but you know what, Leo?
What?
They're opening for us.
Just for us.
Yep.
Colleen did an amazing thing, talked the chef into staying one more night.
That's amazing. It really is amazing.
It is.
We'll be shutting the place down tonight.
Yeah. Yep. So if drink all you want, because they don't need it anymore.
They want you to drink it all.
Yes. Yeah, so tonight it's from 4 o'clock to 7 p.m. We're going to be at the Red Dog Restaurant and Bar. And
on Second Street.
On Second Street.
Right around the corner from here. Very short walk. You all should join us.
Yeah. We can't drink in here.
We can't.
Which I have a huge problem with Microsoft. I don't know where you are. Maybe next time.
When I get there, though, I'm going to ask you about the bash thing, if you don't mind.
Yes, please. Actually, if you could.
After a few drinks, it might be better to ask him.
Well, my biggest question is, they mentioned it'll be available to insiders. Is it the next insider build? Do you know?
I believe it will be.
I think it will be.
Yeah, I think it will be.
For Fast Ring only? Or?
Yeah.
Probably. They didn't really say it that clearly.
No, but that's that's how these things go. And I think, I bet it's next week.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice. I mean, not so nice.
Leo is champing at the bit.
He is. He can't
run
back.
Like, he's so excited about this.
He is.
And we're all just really interested in how they did it and what.
I just want to know if you can uninstall it.
It's you get it from the Windows Store, so you don't have to install it in the first place, Paul. You'll never have to see it.
Oh, nice.
So here's the.
That's where all Linux users go for their wares. The Windows Store.
Yeah, the Windows Store. We love it.
Yeah.
Richard Stallman can't wait.
Cannot wait.
And I can't wait to see him using it.
All right, well, I'm going to hop in the car. We're going to head down.
All right.
Yeah, so you're coming down, right?
Oh, yeah, I'm on my way.
Awesome.
We won't breathe on you, I promise.
You'll have to wear the hat.
Yeah.
I will wear the hat. Actually, I must have a Linux hat somewhere.
He's like, I have my own Linux hat.
He probably has a wardrobe. A red fedora.
He opens like the Batcave up and there's a Linux wardrobe in there.
Yeah, I'll wear my fedora. All right. Hey, nice show.
Awesome.
Apologize to... people who had a little issues here and there, but I think it all came out just fine.
Yep.
And very nice.
Yeah, I don't think there's any way we couldn't have these kind of audio issues. So
I know.
It's the way it is, at these live events.
It's the way it is when you're out there. And actually, it sounds great from here. Good. The picture's good too. Yeah. So if you'll both look at each other, shake hands, and we'll say goodnight. That's weird. No, dude, just do, because we flipped you around, and it's very confusing, so. thank you, everybody, for joining us this week on Windows Weekly. Yep. We will be back to our regular time next week, Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC, so please tune in every Wednesday for Windows Weekly. And for those of you who are baffled by the absence of Windows Weekly, well, now you know what happened. You wanted to wait till after, Bill.
We're all a little baffled.
I know.
Thanks to all your great guests, including Gabe Rivera and Richard Campbell and Tom Warren, and I'm thinking, well,
Carl Franklin was here, Brad Sams.
Carl Franklin,
Satya Nadella, right. Peter Bright, Gabe.
We tried to get
Satya and Terry, but they had left already.
Yeah.
Another time.
Stevenson, I stay longer at their conferences than they do.
Yes.
All right. Hey, safe travels. We'll see you. Well, actually, it's a short walk, so yes. I'm the one who has to drive down. But I'll be there in about an hour, and I'll see you.
All right.
Nice. All right. See you soon.
Try not to cough on me. All right. Hey, thanks everybody for joining us.
Yes.
And we'll see you next week on Windows Weekly. Thank you. Bye, everybody.